Hey everybody, this episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Baseball 19. Make your move. Out of the Park Baseball 19 is now available worldwide. You can get it on Steam, you can get it on Origin, or you can download it directly from OOTPdevelopments.com. Everybody is having a great time playing Out of the Park Baseball 19. We are so thrilled with the reception that it's gotten. We're so happy with all the fans who are playing it. More people than ever are now playing Out of the Park Baseball, and there's a whole bunch of cool stuff coming down the road this summer, including the introduction of our brand new Perfect Team online mode, which is going to get a whole lot of people excited. We got a lot of information coming out about that in a couple of months. But until then, there's so much fun to be had in Out of the Park Baseball 19. Of course, it's got the updated opening day rosters for the 2018 season. It's got the ability, of course, to play as every single franchise from the Major League Club down to the low minors and everywhere in between. And of course, it's got the entire history of baseball, so you can go back in time anywhere. You can create all sorts of custom leagues and play out custom tournaments, and you can do all sorts of crazy stuff, including one of the things that we're doing right now. You'll hear us talk about that. We are having 9 of our Press Row Podcast friends draft their optimal team based upon the current major leagues, and we're going to play them against each other to see how it's going. And Out of the Park Baseball 19 is one of the games powering that. There's just so much good stuff to be found in Out of the Park Baseball 19. You can buy it today. It's only $39.99. And again, I mentioned you can get it on Steam, you can get it on Origin, you can get it right from OTP Developments. And if you're an Origin Access subscriber, you can just go click on a button and be playing it right now as part of an online subscription service. We're so excited for you to play Out of the Park Baseball 19. Go check it out, Out of the Park Baseball 19. Well, hello everybody. Welcome back to the Press Room Podcast. I am your host this week, Rich Grisham. Brian Wiedeye is not suspended. He just merely is not the host. I'm taking over this week, and I feel good about that, Brian Wiedeye.
I've been benched. It still feels somewhat disciplinary, Rich.
Yeah.
So, it may not be a suspension, but clearly something's going on here that I'm being punished for.
You know what you did. The rest of the internet doesn't, but you do. Yep. But we also have, one day in the book and then the movie. But that's, we're getting down the road a little bit. We also have with us a very special guest. I'm so excited because he talks about and is in the middle of all sorts of things that I love to hear about and know about. We have from the NPD back with us, Mr. Matt Piscatella. Matt, how are you, sir?
Oh, man, pretty good. Just got off the disqualified list for the PEDs, but we're not going to get into that tonight.
Well, thank you for being here. We appreciate it. I love what you do, and that is doing all the NPD analysis and video games. You know, if you're not following Matt on Twitter or watching his NPD analysis on YouTube, you are missing out on so much great information. So, Matt, we're going to start with you. What, sir, are you playing these days, both sports game and non-sports game? I'm really curious to hear.
Oh, God. MLB The Show 18 is my muse and my nemesis. That game, I'm about 150, call it 170 hours in already this year. Mm. As you know, they have like the 3 levels of mission programs in the Diamond Dynasty mode, where you start with like the base level, hey, get 5 hits and you unlock this player, and then you have the no, you have to play for 100 hours and slog through, 2 to 200 games level of player, and then they have the sell your soul and your kidney and you might get Babe Ruth. So I'm right there in the middle tier where I am just grinding and grinding on career missions for like Gary Carter and Lee Smith. And I love it so much. And yet I wish I could play something else.
I was going to ask, do you think you'll ever get tired of that? Cause I think this is the 3rd year I went in wanting to play extensive Diamond Dynasty. And the grind just does not feel worth it to me anymore. I don't know if it's worn off the appeal or what, with those ultimate team type modes, but it seems for me, it's got like a shelf life of a year or two. And then I start thinking about, oh, I have to go through all of this again. I'm starting with this junk team again and look at these 100 programs and look at all this the stuff that eventually I'd like to reach, but I know I'm probably not going to. And I don't, you know, that's something that we can talk about later. But as far as, is there any erosion in that area as far as year to year people who pick it up and continue to play, or is it compensated by new players every year?
Well, I sure hope so, because, you know, but I want to stop, but the numbers keep going up and I keep getting more players, even though I've had these players, like a bunch of them in years prior, but I keep getting them again. And if I get another hit, I get another player. It is this constant hit, and I love it, and I hate it, and I love it. So I hope so. But I mean, when you look at their track record and what they're doing in terms of in sales and getting and their market, hard to argue with the results. MLB The Show is becoming as big a sports game as there is outside of the NBA 2Ks of the world. So they're doing a lot of things right. I think they're doing a lot of things right about how they're approaching multiple ways for folks to play the game, not just Diamond Dynasty, but also the other modes that are there. So, but I don't know, like, it's the perfect game to just, hey, I've got a couple hours, I just want to turn off my brain, hit ball hard, be, you know, kind of channel my inner Pedro Serrano, yell at Jobu in the corner, and hit ball really hard. And that's what all I like to do.
Yeah, you know, baseball, it's perfect. You know, it's the Diamond Dynasty style mode. It's suited perfectly for baseball. I mean, it can't fit any sport probably better. And of the Ultimate Team type modes, Diamond Dynasty in the Show has been my favorite over the past 3 or 4 years. Seems to be probably the most well received of people across the board. It continually wins the Pasa Padre Community Award every year for the best team building mode. So it's definitely it. I feel that draw in. I always do. They keep improving on it, but it's like, is it too overwhelming now? It's getting into that territory where, Madden and FIFA became so overwhelming in those modes, and intimidating for new people. I don't know if, the show's getting that way now.
Well, you know, it's funny. I've also continued to play the show. And I also continue to play my franchise where I player lock for the first 3 at-bats. And then whenever my, you know, fourth at bat is, or whenever my first at bat that's in the sixth inning or later, I go to the full game. And I play that almost exclusively on the treadmill. And for that 45 minutes, it's also the perfect experience because I get 2, sometimes 3 games. And usually, I mean, always 2. Occasionally, if it's like, you know, 11-0 in one way or the other, I'll just sort of, you know, let it sim out and play it. But it's interesting that I'm having very much a, just to continue to have a good experience with that. I'm not good. I'm never going to be good, but it is at least flatlined. It hasn't continued going down, which is always my bugaboo in this game. But I'm really enjoying the show as well, but playing a completely different way, and there's no way that I'm going to ever dip into Diamond Dynasty. I just can't see it. It's just, it's so big and so complex, and I don't need to, because playing the franchise mode, I am happy and enjoy every minute of it. It's interesting. We're all having different experiences.
Yeah, the one thing that I'm having a bit of some trouble with this year with the show is the addition of the souvenirs mechanic, which basically... in Diamond Dynasty, you are forced to not only trade in players or other cards you might get in the experience in order to trade in for other cards, but they've introduced this souvenir collection mechanic where, for example, in order to unlock Babe Ruth, you might need to collect and trade in, I don't know what the number is, but it seems like an infinite number of jerseys that end up costing quite a bit in terms of stubs. And yes, you can earn stubs while playing the game, but man, these are a lot of stubs, and it sure would be easier if you just went into your pocket and bought some more stubs, wouldn't it? So I'm having a little bit of a challenge this year with this mechanic where I'm spending sometimes as much time in the game as I am in the community market trying to game the market system for these jerseys. And I don't think that's the kind of baseball that I want to spend time doing, but I understand why they do it. I just wish it wasn't quite as ominous as it feels this year. But yeah, other than that, loving the game.
Yeah, those and the bobbleheads and everything. That seems to be the most universally despised addition to Diamond Dynasty in a few years, because it does come across as kind of that artificial way to increase the need for people to have stubs, or the feeling that they do need to get more stubs and purchase them in order to achieve what they need or achieve what they want to achieve. So that's something to watch for, see how they, I know they've already made adjustments to that, kind of lessening the importance of those, but obviously, like you said, on the real big programs and stuff, that's still kind of a barrier for people in the way.
Yeah, and in prior years, right, you would have the system where you'd have to trade in player cards. So it kind of felt in a lot of ways like you're pulling out the old shoebox of baseball cards, right? And you're digging through your commons, and you're like, okay, you know, I've got Andre Thornton. I want to get, you know. So it was a kind of like messing around with a box of baseball cards before. Now it feels like a marketplace, and it's just a little off-putting. But, you know, overall, still having a blast of the game. I play the game as much as I can, and yeah, other than that, OOTP baseball, cranking that out to you. I'm just a baseball. I'm a seam head, so I just keep doing that.
All right, so I got to ask you, and by the way, I did not prompt this at all, just so everybody knows.
I was going to say, no. This seems suspicious.
Not prompted whatsoever. Matt's been playing Out of the Park baseball long before I was associated with it. This has nothing to do with me. But I want to ask you, similar, you know, to the show, what do you do? What exactly do you do in Out of the Park? Do you pick a team, you know, from this year? Do you go back in history? Do you create a fictional league? Like, what's your OOTP experience? What do you do?
Well, there's two things. So I am in an online league that's been going on for 4 or 5 years now.
You are hardcore, so man. I love that.
That's my daily obsession in the morning. First thing I do, get up, check the team, do the adjustments. You know, so that's 20 minutes, half hour. And then the other thing I'll do is pick a late 70s, early 80s team and try to run that for 20 or 30 years. Most recently, it was the 81 Expos I started up and took that to 2027 or some nonsense.
That's a good team, that team.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Oh, man, Timmy Raines and Hawk. Oh, yeah. Good stuff.
Excellent.
Yeah, so I'll do that. Yeah.
So what about, or, you know, if they don't have to be non-sports games, but if no other sports games, what non-sports games are at the top of your list you're playing these days?
I just wrapped up SteamWorld Heist, which, if you haven't played, it's a 2D side-scrolling XCOM with a lot of charm, a lot of personality, really good time. And then from there, I went right into SteamWorld Dig 2, which is a little, I don't even know what you'd call it, Spelunky style, but with pickaxes, and again in the same kind of robot world universe, 2D, but again a lot of charm, a lot of character. So I've been doing that, but mostly, man, I'm grinding those programs in MLB The Show. That seems to be what I really want to do these days.
Have you given thought to trying? We talked about this a little bit last week, but also on the Dodcast a couple days ago, but have you given a thought to Laser League, which is on the Xbox Game Pass right now? And it's they call it a futuristic sports game, which I guess you could classify it as such, but we're having a lot of fun with that one.
Oh man, I gotta check it out. I downloaded it, but I haven't fired it up yet, because every time I sit down to play games, for some reason my body involuntarily picks up the DualShock 4, presses the power button, and then puts on MLB The Show. I don't want it to. It just happens.
Well,
and I can't stop it.
I'll tell you this, Matt. One way, and I don't mean this in a snarky way, but one way to address that is to turn on your Xbox One X and your Games Pass, go to that, and then download Laser League for free. That is how, because then you're, at least if you don't turn on the PS4, that gives you a fighting chance, is really what I'm saying.
I did. I turned it on. I downloaded that game. I've downloaded so many games from Game Pass. I picked up the lacrosse game you were talking about a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Messed around with that a little bit. Totally alien. I don't know what I'm doing, but I won. So I guess that's good.
Mm-hmm.
So I have like 30 or 40 games on my Xbox One that I'm really into playing one day. But that day is not today.
Yeah, I would say give Laser League a try, because at the very least, what one of the great things about it is you could turn it on and play a match which goes a handful of sets, but it's 10 minutes if you want. There's no real big time commitment with that game, and you can actually feel like you get a complete experience in a very short period of time.
And it also looks really cool.
I'll be back in 15 minutes. So I'm going to go run down and do that real quick. I'll be right back, guys.
It also looks really cool, which is nice.
It's a neat game. I mean, that's something I don't know if we can talk about later or just now. I wonder how a game like that, which kind of releases to a lack of fanfare or it's not that there's low awareness, but then it goes into a program like Game Pass, and you know, how does it fare when it releases that way compared to a similar game that might release just in the standard manner?
What do you think,
Matt? Yeah, I mean, well, so man, the jury is still out on this. So last month, Sea of Thieves launched on the Game Pass. Did exceptionally well, came in number 3 on the sales rankings, and that excludes Game Pass downloads and that type of thing. So it had a really strong debut. A lot of folks were worried that the Game Pass would take a lot of the messaging away from the game, but instead it looks like it brought a lot of people to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm waiting to see games like State of Decay 2, other games that launch on Game Pass, how the dynamic changes, right? Because normally a game launches as a big day one, decays for a few weeks, and you know, or if it's a service game, it might grow in sales. But basically, you know what a game is going to do. Game Pass changes that whole dynamic. It throws it all in the blender, and really, we don't know how games are going to sell anymore, given this new way people are experiencing and getting this content. So. Jury's out, and believe me, I'm looking at it really close. These things just kind of take time to figure out.
I love it. Okay, Brian, you got anything you wanted to mention that you've been playing these days?
I haven't been able to play anything since we last talked on that podcast, which was extensively about Laser League, which I would recommend, especially if you do have Game Pass, but it's not an expensive game even if you don't. I think the key to it being worthwhile on Game Pass also is that clearly the online player base is deeper on the Xbox. You're going to have an easier time getting matches. I've seen people on PC and on the PS4 writing that they sometimes have to wait a little bit of time to get matches, online matches, because those online matches are 2v2 or 3v3. So they have to populate a bit, but it's been instant on the Xbox. So I would definitely recommend Laser League. It's a pretty nifty little game. Simple, but it's got quite a bit of depth to it. And as I was saying on the Dodcast, like, my vision is starting to open up a little bit. At first, you're kind of lasered in on, no pun intended, where you are.
Yeah.
And just like running around and trying to switch the lasers or trying to knock the other characters around or steal the lasers, whatever you're,
or just figure out what is going on in the first place in my case.
Yeah. But then as you get comfortable, it starts to open up. You start to see a bigger picture. You start to see where and what everybody else is doing. It's still very fast paced. So you're not really playing ahead. And I also mentioned that I think the key to this game, as far as being fun online, is that you do not have to interact with your teammates really in any way. The only reason you might want to is to determine the classes of characters that you're using. If you want to put together kind of a team that has 3 different skill sets with the characters, because they all have, there's 5 classes and they all have their own unique skill. But you don't have to chat with people, random people online, which I know is something that myself I've never enjoyed, and I know a lot of people don't like that experience. You don't have to be talking in that way that you do with a lot of multiplayer games that where communication is so key. So I think that's one of the things I really like about it, is that it's, even in Rocket League, the communication does matter, but in this one, you don't really need it. So that's key to me in this being a fun online game. And then I also mentioned Late Shift Rich, which you and I talked about quite a bit on that show.
Love it.
That full motion video, basically choose your own adventure. Did you get a chance to play through it a second time yet?
Nope, not a second time. I'm saving that for when I got an hour and a half And I know I can just sit down and go through the whole thing again a totally different way. Since then, when we recorded on Sunday, you know, it's been a very busy work week. So that won't happen but it's a 3-day weekend coming up. So I'm probably going to do that.
Yeah. So I was impressed with how different the outcome was, how different the story played out, completely different scenes in what's essentially a movie, or more like a long episode. Well, let's call it a short movie. And then I mentioned Hidden Agenda, which was a game I just really learned about and found unique because you play with your cell phones with other people locally. Kind of another story-driven, narrative-driven game where there's very little to almost no gameplay. But I kind of enjoy those where I get to see something play out. I don't have to invest 30 to 50 hours in a God of War or, you know, a Far Cry, Rich, or whatever. Those games which have become, I don't know if I have the patience for them right now. I go through these phases where I just don't feel like playing those types of games where I don't want to grind. I don't want to sit down and be like, all right, I've still got 20 more hours to go.
Totally.
And then I'm fighting against that clock where I'm like, all right, I've knocked off another hour. That's not fun to me. It just doesn't work for me right now. So it's these quick games or games where I can complete them. You know, the Uncharted games where you're like, all right, you know, it's going to be about an 8-hour thing.
I love that.
It's not, you know, yeah. That's
what I want.
That's what I'm into right now. So,
like, I'm playing God of War and it's fantastic, but it's not a slog. That's not a fair statement. I'm playing God of War. It's fantastic, but it's so big. And I'm like, man, there's still a lot more that I have to do. I've probably put 8 hours into God of War, which for me is a lot. And we're talking since it launched, because I got it right around the time that it launched. I don't know when that was. Is that 3 weeks? Is it 4 weeks? Is it?
Mm-mm.
It's at least 3 weeks, right? Maybe four.
Yeah,
it's been
a while. Yeah.
But it's just so big. I'm gonna keep doing it, but it asks a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's part of the reason why the next game I'm looking forward to getting, I don't think I'm going to get it day one, but I'll get it soon after, is Detroit Become Human, right?
Yes.
That looks like, to me, the type of game I'm interested in right now.
Cool.
And there haven't been that many of them recently, but that's why I'm hitting these Game Pass games now that I've subscribed, like Late Shift and like Laser League, and there's a few others where I'm going to jump on those, because hey, you know, there's no commitment. I didn't buy them directly, so I don't feel like I have to play it. Like sometimes I bought games and put them in, I'm like, I don't know if I really want to play this, but I spent the money on it, so I probably should. It's just not fun. So that's where I'm at with that. And then of course there's the Super Mega Baseball 2, which I'm still playing off and on. I love that game. We've talked about it quite a bit. I enjoyed the episode of the podcast, Rich, where I wasn't on and got to listen to Owen talk about it. And who else was on that episode?
Mills.
Yeah. Yeah. They both talked about it, really hit on what makes it so great. And that is another game that on Xbox is free. It's not Game Pass, but it is Xbox Live Gold. And then you got what? You got like a week left or so to grab that if you're on Xbox. So do that. If you've got Xbox Live Gold.
Agreed.
There you go, Rich.
Agreed.
Off to you.
So I mentioned I'm playing the show. I'm also playing Pro Evo. In fact, in my Champions League quarterfinal in the first leg, I beat as Everton, a completely different Everton than the real Everton, because my Everton has some of the world's best players on it. The real Everton does not. I defeated Inter 4-0 in the first leg and then 8-0 in the second leg. So I wasn't able to go completely undefeated in the Premier League. I played, I think, 31 games or 30, and I've lost one, drew like 4 or 5 and won the rest. I am going to do the treble, which is winning the Champions League. I mean, I'm very confident I'm going to win the Champions League, although I have FC Barcelona coming up in the semis. So that'll be a challenge. But I'm pretty sure I'm going to win that, and I'm definitely going to win the FA Cup. And so I got a situation coming up, and I've talked about it before with Pro Evo, where when I go into my third season, and I will, do I up the difficulty? Because I really shouldn't be this good at Pro Evo. It's taken me years and years to get to the level where I can do this, and I'm just doing it on the default level on Pro. But I mean, this is the first time I've ever been this successful in this game.
Sounds like a humble brag, Rich.
Well,
I shouldn't be this good.
I'm not good at anything, Brian. I'm bad at video games, all of them. This is the only one I'm good at. And when I say I'm good, if I play an actual pro Evo player, like someone who has any quality, they will destroy me. Because the other thing I wanted to mention is, Brian, the World Cup is coming, and I'm in an online FIFA World Cup that I'm very excited for. And you are refusing to join, which is upsetting to me.
I did not, when you texted me, I didn't realize you were doing it with World Cup. I thought you were just doing another one of your leagues. So maybe I'll do it then.
Well, if you want you got to tell me right now, because you got to get in, because they're drawing the teams.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to lose anyway, so I don't
care. Me too. But who cares? That's the fun. But Brian, in my online FIFA league, I came in fourth, right? I finished in the top half of the league. This is good for me. So I'm excited.
Is it just a tournament, like a single elimination?
No. It's groups. We got groups, and two games against everybody in your group and the whole thing. And so there's a lot of good friends of the show in it. Kat Bailey's in it. She took Japan. Todd Zuniga, the legend himself, took France. Jeremy Stein, a friend of the show, a FIFA savant. He is stupidly good at FIFA. He just has been playing it at a high level for probably 10 years, if not more. He took South Korea, handicapping himself a little bit. It doesn't matter. He's still going to win. He's insanely good. He and Kat will be in the final. That's my prediction. Even though Kat is Japan and Jeremy is South Korea. I took Germany, Brian, because you know why? Because I'm not good, and I'm not going to beat Jeremy or Kat anyway, so I might as well give myself the best chance to at least, score some goals. Because I am going to be competitive. I'm not as good as Kat or Jeremy. So I took Germany.
Has anybody taken Belgium or Denmark?
Yes, both of those have been taken. As a matter of fact, I can tell you who.
The two I looked at. Thanks.
Well, you said no.
If you got this much challenge coming in the FIFA thing, man, keep it on easy on Pro Evo. I'm all about easy mode, baby.
Well, it's not easy. On Pro Evo, it's on standard. The standard.
Rich Grisham easy. Standard for the rest of us. Life's hard enough, brother. Like, live your dream, man.
You're right about that.
Be Pele, god in of something. Football.
There you go.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah, so both of those clubs have been taken. But you still got a chance, Brian. You should join us. It's going to be fun.
I don't have a chance. I don't. But, I'll do it. I was just worried that I wasn't going to have time. FIFA matches are pretty quick. So, count me in.
All right,
I don't know. You'll have to send me who's available, and I'll choose.
Yep, excellent.
And it's Xbox?
It is Xbox One, yes.
All right.
Cool.
FIFA's not in EA Access Vault yet, but I do have it on. I'm pretty sure I got it on Xbox. So, yeah, let's do that.
Cool. Beautiful. That's great. I'm literally sending the note right now.
All right.
Real time. All right. So that's exciting to me. Matt Piscatella. Some very interesting stuff happened this week. Brian and I, everyone knows what we're going to say about this, although we'll still say it anyway. But I'm interested to hear your perspective on the, in our world of sports video games, this is a big deal with EA giving up the PGA license and with the little guys from Halifax, Nova Scotia, HB Studios, getting the PGA license in some form, anyway.
Rich, can I clarify before we go on?
Yes.
Because I received a statement from EA, and they blasted this out to quite a few people, I believe. But because initially there was I don't know who sent out the news on the license, but it was that EA had parted ways with PGA Tour. Technically, that hasn't happened. The statement from EA is that we continue to have an ongoing relationship with the PGA Tour, quote unquote. That obviously doesn't mean that they're putting out console game. Maybe they're going to continue. Maybe they're going to do something on mobile. Who knows? But they haven't completely cut ties with PGA Tour, regardless of whether they put out another console game or not. They still have an ongoing relationship.
From a consumer standpoint, they don't, because they took their game off the shelf. So I can't go get their golf game anymore. And now HB Studios has it. So, Matt, I have a whole bunch of thoughts on this, but I want to hear your thoughts first. What does this all mean to you? What's the impact? What does it signal? And anything else you got on this?
Well, shoot, in terms of impact, it's been a while since a golf game really put a big dent into the console market in particular. There's been some golf games that have come down the pipe, but since Tiger had his decline, really been a tough go for console golf games. So if someone could take that license and do something really great with it, more power to them. I think it's great overall. We've been seeing some golf games show up, like Everybody's Golf, for example, on the PS4, but much more of a cartoony, arcadey experience. So I'm interested to see if we can get some revitalization in the golf sports space in the market. That'd be great.
Well, why do you think that EA stopped making golf games, licensed or not? I mean, they clearly have said, you know what, this ain't working for us. I mean, I guess I'm answering my own question before letting you do it, but the obvious answer is there's no way to monetize the game in a way like you can in Ultimate Team, in the team-based modes, and if, you know, Madden and NHL and FIFA and so on. I'm sure there are many other reasons as well, but it doesn't seem to fit into their business model moving forward. I mean, is that the reason, or are there other things you think?
Oh, that could be the reason. I would hate to speculate on something like that, but given where everyone is and where the market is, I wouldn't say that was the wrong reason, but I don't know if it's the complete or right one. You know, you just look at what's going on in the sports game space on console. It is about monetization. It's about driving recurrent spending, keeping people engaged and coming back over and over and over again. And, you know, perhaps golf just isn't that right now. And maybe it can be. But, tough to say. But I sure hope that when they do bring golf back to console in a big way, it really hits.
So, Brian, this is a big changing of the guard for a license to move from the billion-dollar behemoth that is Electronic Arts to the distinctly non-billion-dollar behemoth that is HB Studios. That's a significant difference, and in a lot of ways, right? It's one thing for an indie studio to have a basically an exclusive license for a console sports game. That's really kind of unheard of until now. But also for the PGA, it's an interesting switch, right? Like sort of having a relationship with a giant maker of video games and then going to somebody else. It's not necessarily good or bad. It's just different. Lots of angles to this story, right?
Yeah. So one of those things where I look at it and what I see is, like, as far as the PGA Tour license, I think when you say, oh, they got the PGA Tour license, everyone thinks, well, that means they're going to get all these golfers and every course out there. And, like, it doesn't work like that. It's almost, I would almost compare it to, like, what NCAA meant for NCAA football, which is it's more about the name than it is what comes with it. Because what you're getting is the PGA Tour branding. You're getting the FedEx Cup branding.
That's a big deal. That means a lot to a video game. At least to me, it does.
Yeah. So, and then they have six courses, just six, although McIlroy released with, I think it was like seven. So it's actually not bad. I think as far as golf club goes, it's more important in name than it is, at least to me, in what it's going to do for the product. So it's important because they need to market this game, right? The golf club, we love the golf club. We've talked about it for years. People who have played it seem to like the golf club a lot. over the years, but it's not, the golf club is not a name like you hear that people know really, besides maybe a hardcore golf fan. And so this helps it branch out to become something more than that, to reach a different audience. And it's important because it's marketing. They can market it as a PGA Tour game that gives it instant credibility. And also, if they're going to do what it looks like they're going to do and release a new golf club game every year, you've got to have licensing. This was one of the things I mentioned when they announced the Golf Club 2019, which would have been just 1 year separated from the Golf Club 2, which is I wasn't certain that an unlicensed game could release annually and be successful, because we already see a lot of games which don't like the UFCs and the fight nights and the tennis games, which you don't have a lot of turnover in terms of rosters, where that seems to be the key driver in people buying games. You have to separate them out further. And so having an unlicensed game where, you know, we improve gameplay, we improve the course creator and all this sounds great and makes the game better, but it doesn't really help sell it. And I wasn't sure how the golf club was going to sell going to a yearly release schedule like that. And I think that's what this really does for it, is gives it something that separates it greatly from the last edition in the series, but also they can market it, they can advertise it. It might show up during golfing broadcasts. I'm not sure, depending on what their arrangement, what their agreement is. It gives them the potential to become a much bigger series than what they would have otherwise.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they would show up on commercials or something like that, unless they're paying for that themselves. But who knows? Maybe the PGA could want to help promote them. It's entirely possible. The thing about it is, to me, yes, it's a limited license. There's six courses that are officially licensed. It's cool that they have the tour name and sort of the Q School and the minor league, so to speak. I think that is a really interesting thing, because the golf club is all about creating your own character and sort of experiencing the game from that perspective. Or I shouldn't say the golf club is all about that. It's certainly not all about that. But one of the cool things about the golf club is you sort of create your own character. You know, it's kind of weird where they've got the license now, but a big part of the golf club is definitely the course creation. And people have created their own versions of all these courses, these real courses that are not going to be licensed, but yet PGA is going to have their name on the box. Like, that's actually kind of a sticky situation, I would think. Like, for example, clearly, obviously, Augusta. You know, there's an Augusta replica in the community for the golf club. I'm sure there'll be one in the new one as well. You know, things like that are a little interesting because you have so much user-created content. So I don't think it's going to be a big deal. I'm sure the PGA – well, I'm not sure. I would imagine – I get the sense the PGA is not going to lean too heavily on that stuff. But you could see them getting a little ticked off, right, where if there are courses that are sort of purporting to be exact replicas of real-world PGA Tour-played courses.
Yeah, I think a lot of that would depend on it. Obviously, people couldn't call it Augusta in the game. That would be an issue. But as far as digitally recreating like a public space, I'm not sure if there's anything they could do about that. And I don't know if the PGA Tour has any control over Augusta, for example.
Good point.
They are very much their own entity.
That's right. You're exactly right. Yep.
So I'm not sure how that factors in. I think the course creator obviously remains important. They would love if people created their own unique courses as opposed to replicating ones. But I suspect we'll continue to see replications in there.
Yeah. I think the other thing, and Matt, you touched on it, right? Golf doesn't – I mean, you touched on it when you mentioned Tiger's demise. Golf doesn't have, in my opinion anyway, a whole lot of big stars right now either. Like, in the golf world, sure, Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson are well known for being championship caliber players, but there's, you know, we saw it when Tiger was playing well in one of the last couple tournaments he was in, the TV ratings were way through the roof because he's a big star. But other than Tiger, that, you know, Phil Mickelson is not Phil Mickelson anymore. So I think that also that I think the fact that I think people would be interested in playing this game less because of the licensed golfers and more about just having the PGA license on it, I think that'll be okay for them. All right, but anyway, Matt, let's talk sales. I love sales so much. I love talking about them. It's my favorite thing. So April NPD sales came out a couple days ago. You, of course, did a fantastic job covering them. One thing that I saw that I loved was that two sports games are in the top 10 in May, you know, one of them many months after release and one of them a couple of months out of release. One is NBA 2K, one is MLB. I want to take them one by one from the point of view of a person who knows. First of all, MLB The Show, is this the best-selling version of this game ever?
It's the best-selling version since I believe it's MLB 14. It's the best-selling version in quite some time.
So why do you think that is, and do you think they'll keep it up?
Well, The Show has been on a really nice upward trajectory the last few releases, so this is just another in a line of improvements for the franchise overall. Last year, it ended up in the top 10 on PS4 overall for the year. So this is now a title that is up there with all of the other really big sports titles. And it continues to improve and get better. So why is that? I wish I knew. It's a quality product. They're doing the right things when it comes to marketing the game. They're leaning into the things they do very well. They're improving some of the things that have gotten some blowback in recent years, like the face modeling and that type of thing. So overall, like along with NBA 2K, these are two franchises that continue to move in the right direction.
You know, since we're talking about The Show and that's an exclusive, it's one of the rare exclusives in sports games anymore. I heard Rich Grisham make an absurd argument on the Dodcast a few weeks ago where he said that exclusives don't matter anymore. Console exclusives don't matter. Isn't that correct, Rich? Wasn't that the argument you were making?
Well, without belaboring the point, you can be successful and profitable in the industry as a console maker right now if you're good at other things. But if you want to be the number one, if it's all about who's number one, exclusives matter. If it's about being successful and profitable, and in Microsoft's case, turning around a disastrous launch and getting back in the game, it doesn't matter from that perspective because they don't have very many. But anyway, that's what I was talking about.
Okay, so what I was going to ask is how important are those exclusives to driving console success? Because you look at The Show, and that helped the PS4 really become the baseball console. Now, baseball was never the biggest seller in sports games. It still isn't, but like you said, its share is rising, and it's establishing itself in that way. But very much when people ask me why doesn't Microsoft do their own baseball game, I always answer there's really no one left that doesn't have a PS4 that cares about baseball. If they cared about baseball, they bought the PS4. And this was a big driver at the start of this generation. Rich, if you remember when we talked back then, it was what console, if you were going to get one, should you get if you're a sports gaming fan? And we all pretty much agreed that you had to get a PS4. And one of the main reasons was MLB The Show being the only MLB licensed game that you can find on consoles. And then also you look at the likes of God of War, of course, which was the big one this last month, and you see how that's driving success. So I'm just curious if you could weigh in and shut Rich Grisham down a bit.
Jesus, there was a lot there. Okay. Man, all right, so, oh, God, let's start with the exclusive thing. So there's two different goals you can have, right? You can have a profit goal and you can have a share goal. If you're lucky and you do everything right, you get both, right? But for the most part, you're either chasing share or you're chasing profit. Part of that is determined by your risk profile, how much money you want to put on the table to see if you can get that bet to hit, right? So, in that case, Rich is absolutely right. You can have a very profitable and successful ecosystem and not have any exclusives. You might lose in share. You might not lead the top of the sales ranking charts every month. But you know what? You're not putting a bunch of money at risk on the table in case a game doesn't work out, right? If one of these mega franchises that happen now with tens, if not hundreds of million dollars on the line in terms of the investment required to make a game, that's a lot of cake. That's a lot of scratch. And you make one bad bet, And okay, we can survive that. You make three bad bets, things get really dicey. On the other hand, if you make three bets and they all hit, holy cow, it's 2018 and you're Sony, right? But if a couple of those don't hit, then you're in worse shape. So I think the answer to do exclusives matter is it depends. And it depends on what you want to do. So that being said, why wouldn't Microsoft go after an MLB game or a baseball game? So you guys have talked about this before on the show. The sports game marketplace has consolidated in a big way, right? We still have two NBA games, but really it's NBA 2K that owns an overwhelming majority of the basketball segment. We have one football game. We're now going to have one FIFA game or one soccer game. We're going to have one hockey game.
Whoa. Pro Evo, my friend, exists and will exist next year. Had to say that.
Sure. Without any licensing of any teams.
Sorry. I was just having a little fun there. Sorry.
Yeah, totally. It's going to be a challenge, right? So the question is, you have so much money in the pot. You have so much money to spread around to place bets. Where do you place your bets? If I'm placing bets on a slate, I don't know if I take on something like MLB The Show, a very established game with a fantastic studio that has been doing this for years and has so many efficiencies that it would take you years and millions of dollars to try to get to the same point to start where they're already at, right? So if I've got that much money lying around, I look at that opportunity or I look at another opportunity for, say, like a new IP or an action game or something that's a little bit more predictable in the return, that looks a lot more appealing. So it's just a problem we have currently right now in the industry as a whole where games are really expensive to make and the return on those games is far from guaranteed. A lot of things have to go right for a video game to turn a profit. And a lot of things have to go right where you don't even know they're going right until you launch the damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that risk profile is just so high that the placing of bets is the most important and risk-filled decision a publisher can make.
Love it.
That was a lot.
I love
Holy
it.
Cow.
That was...
Jesus, that was a question.
That was as articulate of a response as a human being could make. Thank you. So NBA 2K... a monster, a behemoth, a beast. It cannot be stopped. It's got to be the most successful. Well, I say it's got to. Maybe it's not. I mean, I can't imagine other than a FIFA, what would be a more successful, single year sports video game than NBA 2K at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean,
unbelievable success.
North America would be NBA 2K. Worldwide would be FIFA, I presume.
Yeah, NBA 2K, at least for the U.S. market, is up there with the Call of Duties and Destinies and Marios of the world as a premier video game franchise, no question.
And that is because of what? I mean, I would think quality and the NBA being, you talk about golf having no stars. The NBA is all about its stars, and they're everywhere from... the biggest, Curry's and the LeBron James, to the up and comings like Donovan Mitchell, and so many different ways to have fun with NBA 2K. So the quality and sort of the what feels like to me the star power of the NBA right now are coming together really nicely for NBA 2K.
Yeah, and just the NBA's overall approach to marketing itself really appeals to the kind of folks that'll play an NBA game on a console. It's all about fun as opposed to something like the NFL, which isn't a lot of fun, no matter how you look at it right now. The NBA series has definitely seemed to take in that fun factor. Like, we used to get Madden Holidays. We don't get those anymore, but I'm sure no one NBA 2K hits, right? So it just seems to be one of those franchises that is just rocking and rolling, and it's become, I don't even know, like, if you consider, NBA 2K is definitely a sports game, but I think it's much bigger than that. I think it's as premier a video game franchise as we have in the market.
And it, if I'm EA, I mean, I think it's safe to say that Electronic Arts has been doing quite well for itself the last couple of years. Its digital revenues are skyrocketing, driven significantly from FIFA Ultimate Team and to a lesser degree Madden Ultimate Team and NHL Ultimate Team. But they're not in the top 10. And I think only FIFA was in the top 20 for the rolling 12 months. I think I have that right. You know, obviously, this for sure. Is that a problem? Or are they just making money in a different way? And also the calendar isn't quite right to line up for their games to be in the top 10 or top 20? Or is there something going on there for someone to be concerned with it from the EA perspective?
Well, I mean, tough to say. So what we report on is a very small slice of the pie. We report on physical sales, 100%, and full game digital sales for the members of a select group of panel participants, which does include EA, but it's only covering Steam, PlayStation, Xbox. We don't cover things like Origin. So, you know, folks playing on Origin Access or EA Access or buying FIFA, something like that from Origin, are sales that aren't tracked on these charts. And of course, the charts don't take into account the DLC or the microtransaction revenues, right? So looking at these charts to try to get a feel of the total picture of a franchise is probably not the right way to look at it. It's certainly incomplete. And for a publisher like EA, which is the best in the business at this type of thing, I'd hate to make any kind of judgment on franchise strength based on purely the charts that we put out.
Go ahead, Brian.
No, it's okay. I was about to change the subject, shift it a bit. If you have something to add on that one.
I was just going to say, what's your sense tell you about the trajectory of Madden sales? Are they sort of mirroring the general trend in like television where ratings are flat to maybe down a little bit? Are they trending flat? Are they going up? What's your sense on where Madden sales? We know NBA 2K sales are good. We know MLBs are trending well. What's happening with Madden?
And can I add to that, Matt? I'm curious. So besides what Rich is asking, is there any discernible bump that came from the long shot mode? Because we know the story mode in games like NBA 2K and even FIFA has kind of brought in a different type of audience. Maybe people who tend to be novices or intimidated by traditional gameplay or the overwhelming modes like Ultimate Team, and they've made a big investment in long shot. And I'm curious if you saw any sign of long shot having effect on the game this year.
So difficult to say looking at the data I look at. For that, I would want to measure engagement, find out how many people played that mode, how long they were in it, mm-hmm. were they new folks to the ecosystem or not. EA has that ability to see that kind of information, and I don't. So really difficult for me to say if that mode helped or hurt. I think on the overall popularity thing, like sports games tend to follow the popularity trajectory of the sports on which they're based. The NFL has, you know, clearly been troubled in recent years. The moves today are a little bit baffling. But that's a whole other topic. It's very unusual to see a game move in the opposite direction of the overall popularity of a particular sport. So, if the NFL continues to struggle with ratings, attendance, overall interest, then, you know, I would expect games based on it to kind of follow that path.
Yeah. And so the other game I wanted to ask from EA's side of things, probably does exactly go to what you were talking about as far as trajectory of the popularity of the sport, and that's UFC, because UFC exploded on the scene back with UFC 2009, and every subsequent release has really seen it drop as far as sales go. And we've also seen some of the stars of the UFC gone and controversy, suspensions, and Conor McGregor stuff, take over the headlines more so than the actual fights and the superstars. And so I'm wondering, you know, I don't think you talked about it with Rich last time you were on, but How is EA Sports UFC 3? What are you seeing from that since it released? I think it was it back in January?
Yeah, you know what? I haven't really been keeping tabs on it too much. But I understand the subtext to what you're asking, which is, when are we getting a new fight night? which I'm totally with you on, because it is the same studio from what I understand, and I would love a new fight night. Mm-hmm. Shoot, after UFC launched in the first year, it kind of fell off my radar, to be honest. So I haven't really been paying as close attention as I probably should, so I really don't know how to answer that question.
Well, I'll have to accept that answer.
So I want to pivot to something else that I feel pretty strongly about, and that is in 2018 and the concept of reviews. So, a lot has changed in the way that people learn about and experience video games just in the last 5 years. And there have been a lot of discussions about this topic. My sense is that just like there was a significant shift in influencing from the video game magazines to video game websites when the internet became a real thing, the shift in ability to influence and get people to, perhaps purchase games and even just be interested in them has completely shifted again. NBA 2K has had its review scores sort of trickle down a little bit, and MLB has also had its reviews stay around the same, and in fact both games have had some uproar in the community, the hardcore community, about things, which is not that different. But even with those sort of reviews, the sales continue to go up for these games. I don't think reviews really matter anymore to how games are sold and their impact and what people really think about them. And that's not to certainly detract from people who write them. There are plenty of my friends who write reviews. Brian writes reviews, for crying out loud, for Metacritic sites. It's not about them. It's just about, I don't think, based on quantitative data, that reviews actually influence the sales of games anymore. Is that too much hyperbole, Matt? Or do you think, is there something to that?
Oh, man. Okay. I have studied this, as you can imagine, quite extensively. I've run a number of statistical analysis on this very issue. So the conclusions I've drawn from all the data I've looked at here is that reviews don't matter until they do. And what I mean by that is that you have, on the broad scheme, where you have review scores that generally fall between 50 and 95, you have 10-point buckets, 50 to 60, 60 to 70, 70 to 80, 80 to 90, where you might see a slight improvement on the potential sales of a game at each bucket level, right? But it's meaningful, but it's not huge. You get past 90, 91, 92, 93, you have an exponential increase in selling potential at those individual point levels. So it's very much a hockey stick, where the review scores are they're meaningful but not super important until you get to the 90 range, and then they're extremely important. And this differs greatly between genres, right? So an M-rated RPG, like your Skyrims, right? Or maybe that's T. A game like The Witcher 3, the big M-rated RPGs, a review score, the differences in review scores can explain over 50% of the variability in sales between games, meaning that review scores are very important with that crowd. In the sports segment, that correlation is very low. So you're talking, you can explain maybe 15 to 25% of the variability in sales of sports games, given differences in review scores, which leaves, of course, 75 or 85% of the variability in sales unable to be explained by changes in review scores. So for games like sports games, Rich, you're right. They're not super meaningful towards predicting what a game will ultimately sell. The other things around the game, the marketing programs, the PR programs, even the box art, how a game is marketed and sold at retail, because sports games are still sold overwhelmingly at retail, they'll have much bigger impact to the potential sales of a game than a review score will. On the other hand, if you have a big RPG or a big shooter, you absolutely have to have a good review score to even be in the conversation. So yeah, it depends greatly on the minutia of the particular subgenre or ESRB rating group we're talking about. But you're right, in the sports segment, a good review score is a nice to have and not necessarily a need to have.
Yeah, you know, Rich, this is something I've thought about too. And I think there's a few things here that differ in sports games, and Matt hit on some of them. But you look at, so you mentioned NBA 2K, and its reviews this year were the lowest in a decade on Metacritic. And I didn't expect, because of that the sales for NBA 2K18 would be lower. Because what we're looking at with sports games are very established properties on a year-to-year basis. They don't change. I mean, we do talk about all the changes that happen, but to the casual consumer, the average consumer, they're not dramatically different on a year-to-year basis. You're still playing them almost the same way. They've still got all the teams. They've still got, you know, updated rosters, and they've still got franchise mode, and they've still got the ultimate team modes and whatever. So you've got these established series with a track record, with a history. So I don't think a lot of people necessarily look at review scores for a sports game and say, well, that this is going to determine whether I buy the game. They've probably already decided that they're going to get the game, or they're not going to get the game anyway. Now, when you talk about the other sports games, like let's say the Super Mega Baseballs of the world, or you know, a Laser League or whatever, the reviews can bring them awareness and everything. We've talked about that. But I always go back to, Rich, and we mention this all the time, is that my from what I've seen over the years, is that whether it's review scores or word of mouth or both, whatever it is, that takes, with these established series, that takes years before you see a drop off necessarily. It's not one bad release. Sometimes it's not even two bad releases. You need to be on like an MLB 2K 3 bad release in a row type of thing before you see a swing downwards. And yeah, then, but you do start to see, as games get better, you start to see them build over the years.
I don't disagree with you at all, Brian. I just think that now it's different. Like, you're talking about historic data, and you're absolutely right. But I think in 2018, I just continue to get the sense with, as these games, we're in a new age of service games. We're in an age where now if somebody even hears the name of a game, they're going to go right to YouTube and look at it and watch it in action, or right to Twitch.
Well, let me ask Matt on that then, because I'm not certain from what I've read, streamers and YouTubers and those what people call influencers, I guess, they don't have a discernible difference on sales either. I think I read that. Now, I think that's very different with a game like Fortnite, obviously, where it's free to play. But
and that's a game, by the way. There's no such thing as a review for Fortnite, because it's technically in like, you know, pre-beta release or whatever, just like PUBG and these other games that are the most popular games in the world that don't even get reviews, right? Yeah, because it's all based on what is better now, which is, oh, I'm hearing about a video game. Instead of looking at a magazine or looking at an image, I go look and see what it looks like in action, and within 5 seconds I can say, oh, I'm interested in this. This is a game I like, or nope, this is not for me. It changed everything. I interrupted.
So basically, how much is Fortnite killing sports games? That is actually something we've discussed, though, now that Fortnite comes up, because even 2K sent out a survey to people who hadn't played 2K18 in a while, asking, why did you stop playing 2K? And one of the options was Fortnite. So how the competition within the space, how much do you think that affects sports games how they sell or how much people are spending digitally within them? Or are sports games kind of off on their own thing and they're really not impacted by where people are spending their money elsewhere in the industry?
All right. So I think we have like three questions in there. So let me start with...
That's what we do.
I like that. So, Rich, I think you're right on your point about review scores mattering less these days, because they do. The correlations have been weakening over time. And like those numbers I quoted you about, you know, the percent of sales you could explain are lower, certainly lower than they were 10 years ago, and they're lower than they were 5 years ago. So the review score sales correlation is weakening, no question. You can look at that information and clearly see a decline in the importance of review score when it comes to correlating to sales, right? So, so taking it from there on the streamer question, there's still a lot of studying being done. The phenomenon's fairly new. What we know is that there you can see, especially in the beginning part of a game's life, if a huge streamer like a Lyric picks up your game on stream, you can see that your sales tick up. Now, the question is, are streamers playing games causal in terms of like, are they causing people to go buy the game? Or are streamers picking up the game more a result of the game itself, right? Are they, can you look at streamers as being a reason why games sell better? Or can you look at streamer growth being, well, streamers are playing it more because the game's doing really well, right? And that's, I think, the big question.
It's got to be yes to both of those things, right?
Well, and it depends, right? So it depends on who's streaming it, when they're streaming it. I think that there's a somewhat dangerous assumption out there in the marketplace that if we get X number of streamers streaming this game, Y number of hours, our sales are going to go up Z percent. And I'm not convinced that's the way it works, but the jury is still definitely out. And what we're seeing are companies doing a number of things to try to test different theories about the right, even the right compensation for sponsored content, how often, like the pace of stream content, like who should be the best streamers for particular games. And it's a bit Wild West out there right now in terms of trying to figure out how this all really works and if it matters as much as we think it does. Or would something like Google Trends be just as good a surrogate to determine how successful a game might be or how popular a game might be? So yeah, a lot of work still being done in that regard. And when it comes to a game like Fortnite, so Fortnite's had a massive impact, and while we don't track Fortnite sales directly, we can see its footprint all over things like accessory sales. Headset sales, for example, are almost double this year than they were a year ago.
Wow.
Game card sales, like the $25 Xbox Live card someone might buy at a retailer, those sales are at a record high level. We see hardware sales accelerating when there really isn't the slate to explain it. And we're seeing that because we believe of games like Fortnite. And so what I think the industry is trying to understand and get ahead of is, are these new people coming in to play Fortnite? Like, are these totally new customers? Are they customers that are, you know, leaving other games in which they were engaged previously to go play Fortnite? Is it growing the pie, or is it just taking the bigger slice? And I think that jury is still out too. So I think it's a lot of just trying to understand this new world that we find ourselves in when a free-to-play game on a console can dominate the entire cultural discussion of gaming. And that's new. So we're trying to figure it out. It's certainly, I think, Fortnite is certainly up there with the World of Warcrafts, the Guitar Heroes, and the Minecrafts as a cultural shift. How long it'll last and what impact it will have are the big questions.
Love it. It seems to me like the video game industry, well, no, let me change that. The console segment of the video game industry. If you are a platform holder, a la, aka Microsoft, Sony, or Nintendo, and or excuse me, if you're one of those three platform holders, or if you are a big AAA publisher, EA, Activision, Blizzard, Ubisoft, Take-Two, you are filthy rich right now. You are just making so much money right now. These are very, very, very good days for the big guys in the console video game world, right, Matt? I mean, that's what it sure seems like to me.
The earnings reports for most folks would kind of support that, sure.
And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that, relatively speaking, the economy is humming along really well. There's low unemployment, right? I mean, the Dow Jones and all the stock markets are at relative highs to where they've ever been, right? So is there a lot of that just going on? Like there's a lot of people, a lot more people working, and they have a lot more money and they're spending money on entertainment, right? Is that kind of what's driving a lot of this, do you think?
Oh, man. Perhaps. I think that we're seeing an overall increase in the number of gamers we have out there. So basically 143 million in the U.S. play video games. That's roughly half the population. That's up from low 120s a few years ago. So we're seeing an increase in the number of gamers. We're seeing an increase in the number of games that are available, an increase in the number of monetization mechanics that are out there. And we're seeing an increase in the engagement level of folks when it comes to video games. They're playing more games for longer periods than they have in the past. So I think there's a whole bunch of things happening at the same time that are really positive for the market trend.
And I mean, everybody knows it, but like video games are disposable income, right? You're not spending money on video games if you haven't already got your rent and your food and your transportation like taken care of. It is expensive and it is clearly disposable income type thing. So the fact that this many people are able to spend that kind of money on this. If this were 2008, 2009, when the economy was in such a bad spot because of the market meltdown, I don't think we would be seeing numbers like this if something like that were happening now. That's sort of my theory on this anyway.
It depends. If you recall the last downturn, that was the peak of the Wii. We had Mr. Kotick over at Activision say that the video games were recession-proof. Turned out to not quite be the case, but we had
Definitely not.
We had some very heady days in the mid-cycle Wii and then the Guitar Hero run. It wasn't really until 2011, 2012 that we really started to see video games take a big dive. Games operates, at least the way the data looks to me, it operates more in its own world of cyclicality. But you're right. Like if all of a sudden disposable income dried up, that would absolutely have a negative impact on the industry for sure.
All right, Brian, you have any questions for our esteemed guest before we let him get out of here?
No, I think he's getting tired of us by now.
Oh, never.
No, every answer is, oh, boy.
Oh, let me fill up my Diamond Dynasty team. Oh, man. I love Larry Doby. You know, seriously, before I bail, one of the things that I think is absolutely stellar about MLB The Show that I love to tears and I love it so much is that they continually bring back players that, you know, even I as a huge seam head don't really have an appreciation or understanding of. Like this year, Joe Torre and Larry Doby, like guys who I knew the names, I know they won MVPs, but I didn't really understand the kind of players they were. I love that MLB the show does that. I keep telling the people I meet on Twitter that work over there that I want a Greg Luzinski or a Gorman Thomas.
Like, there you go.
Slugger. Just let me hit bombs all day like I ate a Buick.
They would thrive. Gorman Thomas is built for baseball in 2018. Strikeout or home run. He would be so much more valued right now than he was in his day. You know that?
oh my God, just give me Gorman Thomas. Give me the big mustache. Oh, or Cecil Fielder. And just, it'll be just like a big butt. And that's all you can see is a butt with arms. Anyways.
That's great. I mean, I love that about him, the opportunity to kind of learn history and learn about people you didn't know. That was one of the things I liked most about, we only had 1 year of Ultimate Team in NCAA football, and that was, of course, the last game, NCAA Football 14. But getting to, getting to play with players from the past in college football, because a lot of people, yeah, you might have a recollection of people in the pros, but not every college football legend went on to become a prolific professional. And so that's one of the things I liked about NCAA football, was you were getting and learning about guys you maybe never even heard of before. So that's one of the great ways now that these games that, you know, a decade ago or before, celebrating the past, where we've really gotten to now, began a lot with NBA 2K and everything with legends. And now we get to appreciate them even more.
Yeah, or like Don Sutton, they have, you know, four different Don Suttons over his career. And you can see how he evolved as a pitcher with his different pitch selections and different. Oh, I just, anyways, I could talk for hours on it. I just love it to tears.
Well, excellent. That's all. Matt Piscatella, the MPD, thank you so very much for being with us tonight. I appreciate it. Loved having you on.
I don't know that one.
Oh, sorry, Alexa. I must have said something to make her say something. such great analysis.
You know what it is? Piscatella, that's way too close to Alexa.
I guess you're right. Good point.
Ah, there it is.
Where can people find you on the internet, sir?
Okay, yeah, I tell chicken wing jokes all the time on Twitter at Matt Piscatella with one T, because it was the 70s and my mom was drugged when I was born.
Oh boy.
So Matt Piscatella with one T, and we can hang out and tell jokes.
Love it. Brian Wiedeye, Pasta Padre, where can people follow you on the internet, sir?
Come on, they already do, Rich. It's Pasta Padre everywhere. Thank you very much. Just Pasta Padre everywhere. And obviously you find everything on PastaPadre.com or on Sporting News or on the Press Row podcast or Hit the Pass or wherever. And that's all fed through my Twitter, Pasta Padre.
Love it. All right, real quick before we go, we're going to have him on for a segment next week. But a fellow named David Carducci has created a brand new website called OOTP-Yakker.com, where he and a bunch of his friends are telling their stories about playing out of the park baseball. I want to give them a shout out. It's OOTP-Yakker.com. That's Y-A-K-K-E-R.com. They're doing a bunch of really fun stuff, and we appreciate it from everybody from Out of the Park. So go check that out. And I mentioned we're going to have him on next week for a segment chatting about that. Thank you, everybody, as always, for listening. We always appreciate it so much. We've been doing this for a long time, and we look forward to keep on doing it. And we do that because of all of you. So thank you for listening. And we will be right back here next week with another episode of the Press Row Podcast.